Okay, so I would like to thank the organizer for this invitation in this very nice venue. And okay, no, it's lunchtime, so I will try to be as fast as possible. And one thing that I would like to discuss and show you are the results that in our group, I am in the National Research Council of Italy and the Institute of Market and Technologies in Lucca, in Italy. The activity that we did on one topic that I believe nowadays is very important, all the people are looking at newspapers, for the crisis that we are living and the structure of the economic networks. My point is that networks are everywhere, in finance and in economics, that we need to understand what networks are and which is the effect that they have on these economic systems in order to, you know, to try to fight the crisis in which we are living now at the moment. And so this is the first picture. This is a picture I took from the New York Times, and essentially it illustrates the situation of the sovereign debts between nations in Europe. So I'm afraid that nowadays more and more countries have become red. Red is a problem. So you see Italy is very deep red there. And the point is that, okay, we have a structure like these ones everywhere. What is the role of networks? Do they increase or decrease the stability of the systems? Are they playing a role in the velocity in which distress is propagated? And can we control by using the words of the talk by Laszlo Barabási? Okay, so to answer these that are very difficult questions, a lot of people start working in this area. So the European Central Bank, this is a picture of the Euro Tower in Frankfurt where the European Central Bank is, just called for a study of networks in various reports. Even the former president, I don't know what is the title of Trichet, but I mean the former responsible for the European Central Bank was explicitly asking to take into consideration methods from network theory and statistical physics. I'm a physicist, so that's why I'm citing that. I would like to put some advertisement on a project that I'm running now, and this is about all these questions we don't know yet. So you can find our publication and some of the activities, maps that we are doing at this website. And the idea is that we would like to estimate the systemic risk. We would like to know what is going on in the economy by using networks. And essentially, just let me mention what we mean with systemic crisis. So the probability that a large fraction of our system will go under distress at the same time. So in my slides, I would more or less present some different facts, so some topics, so I can stop in any moment, so don't be worried for your lunch, and just give you a few examples of the kind of things we are studying. So the first topic we studied, this is a kind of control, if you want. It's who owns who, no? In companies. So this is an example that we took in the stock market. These are the companies traded in the New York Stock Exchange in year 2000. And the point is that, okay, if the property of these stocks is diffused between different institutions, okay, a bankruptcy is not a big deal. And no, I don't want to log in. And instead, if you have a situation like this one, in which you have hubs, a lot of companies that are owning a lot of other companies, then, you know, of course, this is evident without entering into detail that this is going to affect, no, what is going on. So the problem is much, much bigger if one hub is affected. Working on these ideas, Stefano Battistone and co-workers in the Zurich ATH made a study of 3 million companies worldwide, in which they took out 43,000 companies that are transnational companies, and they found that a relatively small group owns a very large fraction of all these companies. So this is the first seven companies that you can find list. But the idea is that more or less than 150 companies owns more than 40% of the world. So this is a problem, no? Because if one of those is affected, then everything crumbles down. So you have this pyramid of capitalism shown here. Of course, there are other networks that you can consider. So this structure of hubs and peripheral nodes you find everywhere. So trade, for example. If you take the analysis of who's trading with whom, you know, in the world, okay, you have different years, countries changes during years. So in 2000 they were this, and in the 60s they were different, but always, if you consider what is going on, always you have this structure of hubs. The big hub is USA there, then you can find, is there a pointer? Well, I can use this one. Then you can find Japan here, and you can find, you know, the usual suspects, you know, the Kingdom, France, Germany, you know, Russia here. And so this is telling you something about the fragility, you know, about the structure of the World Trade Web. This is one of the few systems in which we have some theoretical insight of what is going on. So, for example, Garlaskelli and Loffredo made a wonderful work in reproducing the statistical properties of these systems by using the GDP as a proxy, no, of the probability with which will you trade in the network. Technically, if you want to know, this is a fitness model in which the fitness is a GDP of the country. Passing to another approach that you can have in trade, and this builds essentially on the works by Haussmann and Cesar Hidalgo, so on the structure of production in the country, so on the structure of activities that that is exported in any different countries, you can have from publicly, this is a site of United Nations, the statistical division, you can have a very detailed division of the things that every country does. So for example, at the level of the different fruits, bananas, apples, and you know which country are exporting these products. So this information can be arranged in a matrix, so you have on the rows the different countries, on the columns you have the different products, starting from, let's say, cereals to services, and this matrix has all the information inside of who's producing what and exporting what, apart all the details in which we can enter if you want, so how you put 0 and 1 in this this element of the matrices. From a mathematical point of view, actually this representation is not very helpful. As a mathematician or physicist, we pretty much like to have square matrices because you can demonstrate a lot of things with that, but this is an easy task. So if you take the previous matrix and you compose in these two ways, you obtain two square matrices, one that is giving the number of products that is produced by both countries I and J, and so on, the number of countries producing both products I and J. So let's see an application of that. Once you have this information, you can use networks to extract something that you can immediately visualize. So for example, you can define a measure of competition between countries. How much are they different according to the products that they produce? So you have a simple formula, but essentially it's the intersection. You see I and J are two countries. The first set is the number of products they do, and the second one is the number of products that J produces, and the intersection is their competition, more or less, if you want. Well, you can do more formally, mathematically. The point is that once you have that, you can cluster countries according to their production, and what you find is that, mostly unexpectedly, you have countries like, for example, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Iceland, that are all competing. So they're producing essentially the same products. And this holds more or less in all the cases, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Belarus. No? So if you have to find a product and enter into the competition, you tend to produce what your neighbors are doing. That, you know, may have some sense, maybe not, I don't know. But this is certainly some information that you can sort out immediately in that. Okay, here you have, again, the usual suspects. So it is the G20, and okay, these are less developed countries, for example. You can play the a little bit, not this game. It's not perfect. Let me point out something that, okay, Australia, New Zealand, and Kazakhstan. So there's room for improvement in that. Of course, you can do the same stuff and the same game also for products. You remember the products we have at the detail of 4 digits, so even fruit, you can distinguish bananas from apples. So if you color products and you do the same game and you color them according to the first digit is a general classification, you should expect a cluster like this one, all with the same color,
Okay? And actually, this is a bit more messy, but there is information inside. So consider here, for example, this is mostly red and one blue. Blue is a problem because it's food. Okay? So, but what is going there or going on there? So if you take this cluster and we see which is the central node, okay, this central node is parts and accessories of motor vehicles. So you produce, you know, all the things that you need for cars, so manufacturing of copper, nickel, aluminium, road tractor, whatever. And then let's pass to what is the food. This is rape and colza seeds. That is a biofuel. So it makes sense, no? So if you produce all this stuff, to produce also that. So there is some information inside that you can sort out, even if you don't expect. So what is the take-home message of this activity is that a trade aggregated, as in the previous slides or not, exploded as in the papers by Hausmann and Hidalgo and Barabasi, has been presented, is a network. And from by knowing little of network properties, you can extract information from the structure and you can use networks to visualize this hidden information. Through networks, you can quantify some of the properties of countries, their production and their competition in quite, I would say, a simple way. Then you can have networks out of regulation. So one of the crises in the 2008 and 9 was the crisis of liquidity. So the people queuing and asking for their deposit outside banks. So European Central Bank want to fight this. And what is the regulation that has been done is to deposit the 2% of the cash of every bank operating in every country into the national bank of the country. So for example, the banks operating in Italy must deposit this 2% in the Bank of Italy. So this is a reasonable regulation. It looks like it's very reasonable. So this 2% is always available. The problem is that when you analyze the data, this is a snapshot of the data we analyzed, 3 years from 1999 to 2002, what we found was quite surprising because to fill this requirement, then the bank created the market. In this market, everything is recorded, so you can analyze, and the kind of structure that you obtain is this one. So you have a core made by large banks, so the black means very large and the yellow means little ones, so they trade as crazy, and essentially they are lending and borrowing, while the yellow ones on the periphery here are mostly lending money, you know? So it's the small one that are keeping the market alive. You can see that by considering also the degree distribution and distinguish the contribution to the various degrees by the various group of banks, from the yellow small one to the black that are the large ones. And again, this is a network, so it's a very fragile system. So a very sensible regulation that is, okay, let's put some of the cash apart to be used whenever we need, creates a market. This market is intrinsically fragile and surprisingly is only kept alive by the small banks. Okay, so the take-home message is that the complex systems like economics, reasonable requests may produce unexpected results, so you can trigger further crisis. So I will pass to the last example. There will be a few slides, then I'm done. And there is another network. It's a network of people, investors, people that would like to buy or sell their stocks. And for such network, we don't have a lot of information because I don't know who's doing who, and the social ties are very difficult, as Kim was telling before, to measure. Okay, that's the point. And so there is one possibility. Yes, there is one. There is the information that you provide in doing your queries in a search engine. So when you go on Google, on Yahoo, and you look for something, okay, this is a query, and this is recorded. So what we did, we took a series of query logs from Yahoo Research, and we were considering the volume of queries, how many people were looking for this symbol, AMZN, that is the ticker of the stock Amazon in the Nasdaq market, and we compared these query logs with the volume of the stock in the market. And so you can see, even by an inspection, that there is some anticipation. Okay, you can sort out which is this information. Okay, here I'm describing a little bit more technical what we did. So there are stocks like Apple that you can look for the ticker, AAPL, but then you have to throw away all the queries about apples because, you know, I mean, this could be a query related to everything, not necessarily to the stock. And we consider only the stocks traded in Nasdaq 100, so at the end, by putting all these constraints, you end up with 70, more or less clean data for these stocks, and we focus on 250 14 days. Okay, I don't want to enter into the mathematics, but the point is that even if you change and consider another stock that is Nvidia, that is traded in the Nasdaq, what we find is a correlation between the signal of the query logs and the signal of the trading of the stock in the market. The point is that this is an anticipation of 2-3 days most. This is the time delay delta, and this is measured in days. And so you see it goes down when the time passes. And of course it could be that one stock is overperforming and the people look for the queries. So we checked if this was the case, if this is only a correlation of there is some causality. Okay, these are the data on that. And in order to measure that, what we did was a Granger causality test. So if one time series causes another one, well, okay, you can do some hypothesis and verify if they are true or not. So our results are summarized in this table, and the point is that in almost all the cases it is the queries that are causing the volume in the sense of the time series. Of course the queries are not causing anything, but you can extract information from the queries and predict what will be the volume of the stock traded in the market. I would cut this story short and pass to the conclusions. The conclusion for me are that you have plenty of networks going on in economics and finance. So you have individuals that are determining market trends through, you can measure that through queries. And then the companies are trading, are producing, and owns each other, and asking credit to banks that are other companies on their own. So you have another network of companies, another network of trade, a network of bank providing liquidity to the system, and you can even put all together these systems on different layers of complexity and consider the network of countries that are organizing the trade and production. All these features must be understood by means of the mathematics of networks, and in principle we would need even more sophisticated mathematical framework like that of the network of networks. I would finish by putting the slide of the people who is participating in the project that we are running now, so it's several nodes, and I also presented part of their work, so it's fair to show their names here. So thank you very much for your attention.